You're listening to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Hi everyone, Paul here, and just a quick message from me to let you know that if you are looking to improve the performance of your team, no matter whether it is a work, sporting or community one, then we've developed some tools to help. On the website, you will find our Thriving Teams Diagnostic, which uses insights from the more than 200 great coaches we have interviewed to challenge you with a series of questions to help you understand how your team is performing. It's free and only takes a few minutes to complete. If you'd like to know more, you can check out our website, thegreatcoachespodcast.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast.
To me, being perfect is not about that scoreboard out there.
This is a chance of a lifetime.
When you can understand the person, you can then work towards a common goal.
We are all on the same team.
Know your role and do it to the best of your ability.
Focus on the fundamentals. We've gone over time and time again.
Your defense has got to be better.
Leave no doubt tonight.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
Hello and welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast, where we explore leadership through the lens of high-performance sport by interviewing great coaches from around the world to try and find ideas to help all of us be better leaders. Our great coach on this episode is Vern Gumbatta. Vern is that rare individual who has coached at the elite level across multiple sports. His foundation is in track and field coaching. However, over a career that spans over 50 years, he has worked in Major League Soccer, Major League Baseball, the NBA, cricket, the NHL, softball, swimming, and with the San Francisco 49ers and Kansas City Chiefs. He is also the author of 9 books and over 100 articles. By any sense of the definition, he is a coaching polymath. In this terrific interview, some of the key highlights were Vern's view on the importance of pointing out an athlete's negative self-talk and working with them on reframing it, how he defines mental training as mind plus muscle equals life, the importance of rhythm when it comes to analysing elite performance, and how he describes his philosophy as trying to help the best be better, and how he tries to achieve this as a coach by helping prepare the athlete for the path ahead, not preparing the path for them. We were very lucky to get this interview with Vern, and I hope you enjoyed as much as we did. And just before we go to the interview, today's podcast is brought to you by the Macquarie University Business School's MBA program. Designed to empower, challenge, and transform, the Macquarie MBA gives you the business skills and knowledge you need to succeed in an evolving global economy. The program bridges the gap between theory and real-world application, bringing together world-leading professors, executives, and industry partners to teach you how business can be used for good. I have just started working with the team at Macquarie on some projects and can attest to the quality of the people and material. To find out more, search for Macquarie University Business School's MBA. And now please enjoy our interview with Vern Gumbatta.
You're listening to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Vern Gumbatta, hello and welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Well, Paul, thank you. It's an honor to be considered a great coach. I just think I'm another guy that has been very fortunate for 50, going on 54 years to coach. My dad, my mom and dad were immigrants. My dad was basically did physical work all his life. And I think even to the day he died, he couldn't understand how I could make a living in t-shirt and shorts, you know, and not digging ditches or something like that. But so I kind of joke that I've been able to travel all around the world on somebody else's dime, be around some of the greatest, greatest people you could ever imagine. And we call it coaching. So it's pretty neat. It's pretty neat.
Yeah. We're going to get all into that backstory today and those 50 plus years of coaching some very diverse sports and sports people. But Vern, something really simple to kick us off. Could you tell us where you are in the world and what you've been up to so far today?
Oh, today, yeah. Well, I'm in Sarasota, Florida. Got to work with probably one of the three best swimmers in the world this morning, a 16-year-old Canadian, Summer McIntosh, who swims for our local club here, the Sarasota Sharks. And of late, my emphasis has been a lot on dry land preparation for swimming. So her and I and the head coach on Tuesday and Thursday mornings go about 45 minutes of dedicated, we'll call it core work, but it's very postural shapes, all of that kind of stuff, two mornings a week. Yeah. So it's, and I feel really blessed at this time in my career, which is basically the twilight, the end of my career, to be able to work with somebody like her, because she really is special, really is special. And I haven't said that about too many that I've worked with, some great ones, but this young lady is, she's got it.
We'll keep our eye out for Summer as she heads towards the Paris Olympics. But could I start, Vern, by just referencing, here's just a few of the great coaches you've worked with, and there are so many, but there's Gary Winkler, Jack Blatherwick, Nort Thornton, and of course, Frank Dick, who we've also interviewed on the show. But you've seen so many great coaches up close. So I'd like to ask you, Vern, what is it you think the great coaches, the really special ones, do differently that sets them apart?
Well, I mean, I've over the years and of late working on my new book, I've given this a lot more thought. And, you know, and I guess you get to be 75 and you're a little bit more retrospective, respective, and that. And I think the biggest thing, like you name those people, is first of all, they had incredible technical knowledge. Okay. But that's a given. There's a lot of people that have technical knowledge that can't coach their way out of a wet paper bag, you know, and all of those people you mentioned are just, they're great people. They're really, really good people. They can connect with the athlete. They can connect with their colleagues. They're very strong and firm in their foundational beliefs. So they're not going to be waffling in 1 week, believe in one thing, and next week, believe in another. I think that's, you know, I think that's really a characteristic of, you know, of the great ones that I've seen. And I think that's the biggest thing. And it almost seems trite to say, you know, their orientation, they coach. And this is something that Frank Dick articulated before I ever met him in writing. You know, we don't coach shot putters or discus throwers or whatever. We coach people who do that. And it's, as a young coach for me, sometimes because I was into being technical and that, it was easy to forget. There's a great coach that nobody's ever heard of, Marshall Clark, who coached, if there anybody in athletics would know these names, Don Cardong, who was fourth in the 76 marathon, and Olympic Games marathon, and a bunch of really good middle distance and distance runners at Stanford. And when I was in grad school there, I was basically an assistant coach, and being around Marshall he was so passionate. Okay. And that's what they all share. And he cared so much, sometimes cared to a fault, you know, and this is what I continue to see. I've gotten to know Ron Adams, who's a little bit 1 year younger than me, and we share a lot of parallels, from Fresno, California, where I went to school and college, and he's from there. And he's also a Swiss Italian. He's with the Golden State Warriors, and it comes through. He is the coach whisperer of the NBA, but it comes through that it's about people. He can talk for 2 hours on defensive schemes and footwork, but it doesn't matter. I mean, we had a conversation about one player that he worked with, and it was just purely about that player as a person. And if he could get to that player as a person, he would be a better basketball player. So at the risk of being repetitive, I think that's what it comes down to. Yeah.
Vern, your first years of coaching were back at La Cumbra Junior High School in California those years ago. And I understand it was near where you grew up. What do you remember about that early experience?
Oh, it was the farther away I get from it, the warmer the memories. All of those kids that I coach now are in their late 60s, because I was very young when I started coaching. And as time has gone on, because of Facebook, various different connections, I've been in touch with more and more of them. And it is just so gratifying. And again, it comes down to this. We won championships. We won two national championships, believe it or not, for ninth graders. Performances in track and in cross country. I actually also coached basketball 1 year and American football, but primarily track and cross country. And you know what? We talk on Zoom. I've gotten together with some of them. There's nothing about championships. It's about the friendships, about the crazy stuff that Coach Gambetta did, you know, and three of them were talking about, we'd go on over the freeway, and they would go on the Oak. All our runs were named after where they would go. And it was the Oak Park run. And they talked about on the Oak Park run, because it was a really easy day, they all had this really tough Spanish teacher, and they would work on verb conjugations. You know, like, think about that. You know, it's 55 years ago, you know. And so that just reinforces what I said about coaching. You know, I remember some of the workouts. We did really innovative things, you know, at the time. The kids were incredibly focused and dedicated, you know, but there was this cohesion, this camaraderie. And what we had was, everybody talks about diversity today. The first 2 years, we didn't have any girls. I eventually recruited and started a girls' track team there, too, and had one of our throwers end up fourth at nationals that year. And I remember the first meeting with the girls. I said, one of you will place at nationals this year. And they didn't even know what nationals was, right? But on the coattails, sort of on the coattails of the boys, but diversity. I mean, we had kids from the richest neighborhood in Santa Barbara, and we had kids that were just across the border from Mexico, you know, were like their parents were illegal. They were illegal, you know, and it was, and I grew up in that neighborhood. Okay. I grew up three blocks from La Cumbre Junior High School. And I wasn't married yet. So I lived in the neighborhood. And then on Saturday afternoons, Harding School was across the playground across from my house. I'd go out and play soccer with the kids, you know, and I don't know if you could, but I was 21 years old, and I knew all their older brothers. Their older brothers were my age, you know, and they'd known me since they were little kids. So it was really special. I don't know if you can tell by the tone of my voice, but that 4 years was just an incredibly wonderful experience and a wonderful 4 years. Yes. Yeah. Fond memories.
Vern, I've read where you describe your coaching philosophy as coaching the best to be better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, you've coached across so many sports, baseball, soccer, football, athletics, on and on and on. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, are there any similarities in what the best have to do to get better across those different disciplines?
No, there's no question. And I think that's one of the things why I've been able to coach across disciplines, again, people. And, you know, to be the best is really special. And when I say coaching the best to be better, it's go to La Cumbre Junior High. I mean, we knew who the two or three best boys were based upon what they did in gym class, but they were already really good. And probably if I would have done nothing, they would have been pretty good. But to take them to the next level, to have that boy run 4:33 in the mile in ninth grade and do that was, you know, you had to raise the level of expectations. There was a focus, a concentration that was necessary, you know, to be able to do that. Sometimes with college age athletes and even athletes out of school that were really good and underachieving, it was giving them a focus. Working with a 31-year-old, pretty good female cricket player, the best female cricket player of the last 10 years, Elise Perry from Australia. And for Elise, the whole goal is reawaken the athlete within. You know, you are a world-class soccer player, and the more you specialize in cricket, the more injuries you had. So we've got to reawaken the athlete within and bring out that joy, that special thing about training. It's not a chore, you know, and that. So yeah, that's, you know, and again, I mentioned, you know, this morning with Summer, I mean, she beat Kate Ledecky 2 weeks ago. I mean, doesn't get any better than that. She's 16 years old, and she could ride on a reputation and probably get a couple of medals, you know, in Paris, maybe three, maybe four. You know, she's two-time world champion this year. But I think, and I'm a part of a team. Okay, it's not because of me. Don't want to say that. But we are really, and we had some conversations, the head coach and I had some conversations this morning, you know, but she holds us accountable. And you know, and that's really cool. She reminded me of something. I hadn't seen her for 3 weeks because I was in Switzerland. She reminded me of something. So, you know, it's that partnership. And sometimes it's being in the right place at the right time, you know, and that. But yeah, I've been fortunate to observe some of the greatest athletes, not necessarily work with them, and see what it took. And it was just an incredible laser-like focus. You know, sometimes it seems so trite to say these kind of words, but it's true, because you don't get to be the best of the best without consistency and without these qualities really being developed to the finest degree. You have people that are, I call them shooting stars, you know, come up, they win one champion, teams, same thing. They win one championship and you say, and then 10 years from now, you go, whatever happened to, you never play that game? Whatever happened to, I could name those names too. And those are the frustrating ones. That's why the gray hair, you know, the ones that you thought could be the best, and you just couldn't reach. Now, I think coaches, you mentioned about great coaches. I think we have a messiah complex. We have this feeling that, you know, we can save you. We can make you better. And that's something that, you know, 54 years into this journey, I think the last 10 years, I've finally come to the realization that, Vern, you're not the savior. You know, you can show them the way. And the path that you're not going to, you know, this was a metaphor that one of the coaches in Singapore said, you know, today we're trying too hard to make the path smooth, straight, narrow, really, you know, just like no problems for the athlete. And what we've forgotten today, and this is what I think the motto in the back of my shirt, coaching the best to be better, is we prepare the athlete for the path. There's going to be periods of construction. There's going to be dead ends. There's going to be detours. And so coaching the best to be better is preparing the athlete for the path and having them understand the deep, deep investment in the process that's necessary.
Vern, you describe yourself as a specialist at being a generalist.
Yeah.
And in your words, you say, and this is a quote, a synthesizer connecting the dots in seemingly disparate areas, looking for similarities, differences, and patterns that may not be readily apparent. It's a really great description. And I wanted to ask you, could you tell us about a time that you connected these dots and a team or an individual
There's a moment in time. There's a moment in time. And it was October 1973, Stanford University, a movement analysis class. I've told this story a lot, but I'll tell it again. We all have to do a presentation in our respective area. And that time, and it would be if I had to do it today, would be in athletics. I picked the javelin and I picked two throwers that are Yanis Lusis and Klaus Wolfermann. Yanis Lusis from the Soviet Union, Klaus Wolfermann from West Germany then. And Wolfermann won the gold medal by the smallest margin ever, like 5 centimeters, whatever, 5 centimeters, something like that. And so everything was Super 8 film then, okay, or 16, but in my case, it was Super 8. So I took and I had each thrower and I showed them frame by frame, and I started at the foot and worked up the body, you know, joint by joint, broke it down to the most finite things you could think of. When I think about it, like, how did you do that? Anyway, so compared them both, and everybody, oh, that's really cool, because javelin's a cool looking event. I love coaching that event. And so we had Stanford used to have a big history in dance, modern dance, all different disciplines of dance. We had 5 dance master students in the class. And there was this one woman who was just, she was a pain in the butt. She'd always ask all these really pointed questions. And I realized now she wasn't a pain in the butt. I mean, actually, probably one of the reasons I've had any success at all was because she was a bit of a pain in the butt. And she says, she raises her hand, and I thought, oh no, she's going to ask me like what the rectus femoris did when it connected with this or something. And she goes, no, she says, play it again. So I start going click, click, click. She says, no, play it again. And she starts clapping the rhythm. And the light goes on. The light literally goes on. And I go, I get it now. It's not about the ankle and the muscles attaching to the ankle. It's about rhythm and tempo. I just said something like this yesterday on my morning walk. It's about rhythm and tempo. It's a big dance. I remember going down to that track that day, and I was working with my high jumper. I said, guys, I want you to forget everything I've taught you. We're just going to, it's a big dance. And I counted out the rhythm of the steps, you know, and that's been the journey I've been on ever since. So you look at music, you look at dance, you look at the arts, you know, anything you can, you know. I spent last week in my colleague, Martin Bingeser in Zurich, is a hammer coach. And that's the one event I've never coached, but I was immersed in it for like 5 days. And I can just shut my eyes right now and hear the rhythm of a good throw. Okay. And you can see the library behind me. My reading is incredibly diverse. I read a lot of research in you know, in the respective fields, but as far afield as you can go, and when you get out to the edges, that's where you really learn. And getting around people that are of the same ilk, that leave no stone unturned, really want to keep learning. I've gotten to be really good friends with Dr. Mike Joyner at the Mayo Clinic, who's a world-renowned exercise physiologist, and his white coat is in anesthesiology. He's amazing. He's a polymath. He's written books. He writes poems. Ron Adams, that I mentioned earlier. We have this three-way thread. Hardly any of it's about sport. Did you read this article? Did you just read this book? What do you think? You know, but that all makes you a better rounded person, which makes you a better coach, I think. And virtually every coach that I know that's been really, really good has a wide range of interest. You know, they're very intense, you know, in their discipline, but that, and I don't know. I think some of it is, I used to drive the nuns nuts because I couldn't sit still in elementary school. Maybe today, if I were in school and I were 9 years old, I'd probably be medicated and comatose, because it was just hard for me to, you know, I'd see something and it would trigger something else, and it would trigger something else, you know. So that's the story. So there was that. It's hard, you know. Most of the time, it's hard to point to one point in time. But I you know, and people that know me have heard the story a lot. So.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Back when you were coaching track and field at Berkeley, you put together a mental training handbook, which I believe was called Mind Plus Muscle Equals Right. Winning. You're probably going to pull it out of that stack to the right there. But
it's someplace over here, yeah.
I wanted to ask you, Vern, if you had to rewrite that handbook today, what chapters would you add or take out?
Probably wouldn't take out anything. I haven't looked at it in a while. I know you sent that, and I'm sorry. I meant to look at it before I went to Zurich. It's someplace over there on a bookshelf. I think mainly what I'd add would be more work on, and not because this is the current thing, about self-care and taking care of themselves. We talked a lot about self-image and what self-image was and what it was to be a female athlete, you know, and that in at the time they were pioneers. It was a hostile environment in a lot of ways, but I think it would be more, more work on self-care and focusing even farther outside, than equals winning. It might be mind plus muscle equals life. You know, and something like that. But we were lucky. I mean, North Thornton was really instrumental. He was the men's swim coach. He had a mental training coach who'd be, talk about diverse, who'd been an opera professor at Florida State, got a big inheritance, retired. And, you know, Berkeley's where everybody, all the hippies, everybody that was into alternative lifestyles. And he came in and he was the mental training coach and he worked with us. And I spent a lot of time talking to him. And he brought in every 2 weeks, he brought in world renowned experts in the whole area of mental training, psychology of sport. Who was the guy, Esselin, wrote Golf in the Kingdom, guys like that, you know, and any of the coaches that wanted to come. There was only about 10 of us that came, you know, that were into that. But yeah, so I think broaden the view and make it mind plus muscle equals life. Yeah.
And you worked with Monica Seles after her horrific incident, you know, where she was stabbed. I'm sure many of us have seen that horrible footage. But what did you learn watching Monica get back to the court?
Yeah, and there was also the time that I worked with her was coincided. Her father had just died in May, I believe, of it, so it would have been 97 or 98. It was somewhere, either the World Cup was 98. So I only worked with her for about 3 months, but it was a really neat 3 months. A wonderful lady, first of all, just a wonderful lady, really caring. Her and my daughter was 12, I guess, at the time. And, she would come and do some of the running workouts, and Monica wanted to learn to play. She said, I want to learn to play soccer like Kristen. My daughter was a good soccer, which was kind of funny. And, but what I learned from her was, you know, the deep, deep, deep connection between her and her dad and how important he had been in her career. I mean, it was all around. We would go over and work out at her house. She had a clay court, a hard court. There was like a hill that her dad had built, a sand court. And people don't know this. Her dad was a triple jumper in the former Yugoslavia. And so she had, up until she was about 14, she had a very, very athletic background. And what I learned there was, and this is what I said too, I didn't call it that at the time, but Monica, we've got, I would say now to her, we've got to reawaken the athlete within. So we tried to do more athletic type of movements. And somebody had taken her and said, you know, oh, about her weight. They made a big thing about her weight. The woman was powerful. And she's never was going to be svelte, and you weren't going to make her that way. And so you work within the parameters of what she brought to the table. And so we tried to enhance that, in that. So, and again, it was a short period of time, but it was when you work with an iconic athlete like that, it was a really good experience. And I saw her, and I felt comfortable enough to talk to her and said, Monica, hitting for 2 hours every afternoon off the ball machine really isn't going to make you better. But she came back and she said, well, it helps me feel my strength, and okay. I mean, you respect, but I said, I have to offer my opinion, but again, not being a tennis person, she had a reason for doing it, So, anything we would do that was competitive, look out, just like Summer now, So if we were doing step ups against time or something like that, and she said the last one was 12, and she, what did I get, and that. So, get it's that. So that was what a lot of what that experience was. Yeah. And listen, that was a deep emotional trauma. I don't think people even come close to understanding. Then that coupled with her dad dying and how close her dad and her were, it's amazing that she could come back and play, really, emotionally.
So now, when you're asked about mental skills, how do you define mental strength?
Well, yeah, and first of all, you've done your homework. I hate mental toughness. I think it's the worst thing you could ever think about. Everybody uses Navy SEALs and that kind of stuff, and they're not mentally tough; they're mentally strong. And great athletes are mentally strong. They can handle adversity. They know how to handle success. The lows aren't very low and the highs aren't very high. It's trite to say, but they, in each in their own way, are very goal oriented, and that's a mental skill, is to be focusing on goal achievement rather than anybody can set goals. Goal achievement, and mental practice is part of your daily work, So I always say, we had a girl, Emma Wyatt, got the silver medal in Tokyo in the 400 IM, arguably the toughest swimming event. And the whole theme, and again, she was an example of, COVID actually helped her. She got another year of maturity. She really figured out that dry land was going to be important to her. Before, she kind of just did it. And now it became really important to her. And our theme was own the finish. So everything we did, every day, every exercise, was about never losing sight of the fact that we have to own the finish. And she came up a couple of hundreds short, I think. But she came on in the last 50 meters like gangbusters, So mental training. And look, I got to work with Dr. Bob Nidifer, who was one of the pioneering sports psychologists in the world, wrote a terrific book called The Inner Athlete, which if the listeners can get, might be out of print. He pioneered a test called a taste test, test of attentional and interpersonal style. We got really into that at Cal. We did a lot of that with the White Sox. But I think too much of it was sit down and talk about it in classroom settings and that, and not enough on the field and picking out opportunities to point out things that they were doing really well and things that you could work on. Debriefing, part of good mental training is a good debrief after practice and after competition, where you're really, really objective about what you've done, what you haven't done, what you need to do. So, and certainly the discipline. Look, when I started coaching, our textbook at University of California, Santa Barbara, in my California, you go for a fifth year to get your teaching credential, was problem athletes and how to handle them. That's what psychology, you know, it was like you go to a shrink, okay? And there was only two books on sports psychology. Bob Nidifer's was the third book published in the mid-70s. Now everybody has a mental coach, you know. Sometimes I question the effectiveness, you know, but because what I want to do as a coach, my job now is physical preparation. I'm not coaching technique and that, but all of us are mental coaches. We you know, if there's negative self-talk, we point it out, you know, and say, what do we have to do to turn that around? And you know, my favorite book that I assign to athletes is something my mother gave to me when I was, it's called I Think I Can, The Little Engine That Could. You know, I think I can. Now, it sounds trite, but that gives us a frame of reference to go back to when the negative self-talk starts, you know, or they're saying, oh, we're going to go this meet this next week. Look at the times of those. Yeah, you're going to be right with them and you're going to beat them because we own the finish because of what we do. Physical preparation yields mental strength, by the way.
And what about if we flip that coin around, Vern? What have you learned about the measure of a coach?
You know, he won 5 national championships. His winning percentage is 875. Yeah. Probably means that he had really good people and he didn't screw up, you know, in a lot of ways. I think the measure of a coach is what you do with what you have. I'm convinced that there are I know coaches that you've never heard of that are infinitely better coaches than some of the names you've mentioned, because they didn't coach Olympic teams. They coached in a small high school someplace, and every year those kids were just they performed up to their level of ability. Okay. And that's all you can ask as a coach. Now, sometimes great coaches, you know, based on environment, a lot of different things, can get people to rise above the level of their ability, you know, and more power to them, you know. But a lot of people that we look at as great coaches achieve that success through manipulation, domination, and control. I'm not into that. You know, I look at North Thornton passed away 2 years ago, and I look at the tributes to him from his former swimmer still today on, you know, and that. And, you know, he made their life better. That's all you can ask. You know, did they make their lives, the lives of their athletes better, you know, in all ways, shape. And I know that sounds hokey to a certain extent, but, you know, again, and, you know, and the hardest thing is, I will say, is to have a team or a squad with incredible ability. You talk about pressure, that's pressure, you know, because now you got to get them aligned and to reach their ability, whether it's a team or something like that. So,
Vern, these days you run the very successful Game Network and yep. helps people with their professional development. And you've had some great coaches attend. I know Eddie Jones, came over there and talked about it as well. I've heard him mention it. But what does GAIN actually focus on to help people develop?
That's a great question. And it was going back almost, not grad school, but just after when I got out of grad school and went back and was coaching now at Santa Barbara High, the school where La Cumbre Junior High students fed into middle school and then high school. I was exposed to some in 1972 to the AAU, then was the governing body of sport, and they had a learn by doing clinic in Sacramento, hotter than Hades, and a guy named Fred Wilt, who is an iconic figure in track and field, really did a tremendous amount for coaching in the U.S. And we went from 8 in the morning till 5 in the afternoon, and then from 7 to 9 at night every night for 5 nights. And it was and you name it, anybody who was anybody at the high school, junior college, or college level in athletics coaching in the United States in the next 40 or 50 years, 50 years, 50 plus years, was at that clinic and went through everything. You did the events, and he had great teachers. And I thought, you know, this is a model. This is a model. If I ever get the opportunity, I want to do something like this because it made the difference for me. So fast forward to late 1980s, and I started to do some more teaching, doing some workshops for conditioning coaches and speaking more nationally and internationally. And I started a workshop called Building and Rebuilding the Complete Athlete, not strength training, not speed, not. And it was for coaches, physios, doctors, chiropractors, parents, athletes, anybody. And it was very successful. But we did it Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday. I taught it by myself after this last weekend where I talked for 6 hours. I don't know how I did it. It was like 16 hours nonstop. And as we got more and more into it, and I used to say, you can't learn to dance sitting on your pants. You'd sit on your butt, you know, for 8 hours a day and take notes and discuss things. I said, wouldn't it be really cool if we could have a residential thing like this? So in 2007, we started with 13 Brave Souls in a hotel across Florida that had a soccer pitch outside. And we've had it, well, we had 1 year with the pandemic, we have to do it online. But in the last 9 years, we've done it at Rice University. It's total immersion. You get up we start at 6:30 in the morning, and you have Movement Madness. You have three teaching stations where you interact with Jimmy Radcliffe, who's one of the greatest coaches I know, or Bill Knowles, one of the best rehab people, and you learn active learning, and you have breakfast, and then you have two lectures, lunch, you have workshops, then you have two lectures, more workshops, you have dinner, and then you get together for an hour or so and discuss, and then there's a pub on campus where beers are really cheap, and where you can just sit there. And so the whole thing, what is, again, specialize in being a generalist. Everybody, so you're a physio now. Now you're interacting with Eddie Jones. Eddie Jones over at the pub was amazing with the young coaches. Like, why do you want to coach that? Why aren't you doing, and that's the way it is. So you have all these experienced people mixing with new people and men and women. And it's all about professional development, real professional development, you know, not just learning, exchanging ideas. And so the network and, it's very viable during the year. We do, like this week, there'll be a coffee talk. In fact, if you're interested in joining, you can join in. Email me and I'll send you the link. If you don't have to be in the network to join in the coffee talks. In fact, we want other people that will say, like, what are you guys talking about? You know, it's not trying to be a cult or exclusive or anything like that. We do have some different viewpoints. You know, we're not over the moon about some of the stuff that people are talking about today, analytics and all of that kind of stuff. Yeah, we're going to look at analytics, but we're going to try to put everything in a context, okay? And then we're very active in keeping in touch with each other. I mean, just in Switzerland, Martin and my wife are second in command with the GAIN network. We had one of our one of the Swiss coaches had been to GAIN. He came again Saturday. He was able to reinforce to the other people some of the stuff that we were talking about, because we're the theme, like for last year, was coloring outside the lines. And Nico, this coach, said his question was the first night, he says, why do we even have lines? Right on, brother. Why do we have lines? You know, next year our theme is invest in the process. And that idea that I told you about the road, we're not going to prepare the road for you. We're going to prepare you for the road through deep investment in the process. Long-winded answer to say it's a really special group of people that, again, that because of various interactions with people throughout my career that I've been able to gather And a lot of, and what I love about them is I'm not held up like, oh, this guy's a guru. They have no problem saying, Vern, you're full of crap, you know, and it's wonderful. You know, that's about learning, you know, in a, so, yeah.
Vern, you've been so generous with your time tonight. Maybe just one final question, if I could. And I'd like to just read a quick quote of yours before I frame the question. And you say, as you've said in this interview, you say you coach the person. And so being a coach and being a teacher and being a person of influence is a real special thing. And so I just wanted to ask in closing, now that you, in your own words also, are getting to the twilight of your coaching.
Yeah.
What's the legacy you hope you've left with the people that you've coached?
I've thought about this a lot. I guess I've talked to other people. Jean-Pierre Agger, who's an iconic coach, who had lunch a week ago, and he said, "I'm retired." He said, "You're not retired." He said, "I'm not going to travel anymore." And when we left, Martin and I were talking a little bit, and then I had some quiet time, and I'm thinking, you know, I just hope they say, whoever it is, coaches that I've interact with, he cares. He cared. He cared about me. He went that extra mile. I don't want to, as you were just talking, I'll read you something. I just saw something pop up from Summer's mother, you know, thanking me. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, she didn't have to thank me. Her daughter's one of the best in the world, you know, but they know I care, you know, and that's the most important thing. Yeah. Same thing with my children, you know, that they know that dad really cares about them.
And I guess with your children and with those athletes, you've helped prepare them for the path ahead.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. You know, I had the pleasure of coaching my own daughter in track in high school. My son was not into sports, which is fine. He was into theater arts and loved. I mean, he's really helped me with. He's getting his PhD in architecture, and we have some of the greatest discussions. And he's always interested, you know, in what I'm doing, and he gives me a different perspective, you know, which is really cool. You know, a little bit more of a art perspective. Yeah, which is neat. Yeah,
and it's been an absolute masterclass this evening. Thank you so much for spending some time with us, and I wish you all the best finishing that book that I know you were working on before I called, and all the best with Summer heading towards Paris.
Very good. Well, thank you very much. The book is on its way, so I'm very excited, and we mission was accomplished last week. We've got to own the finish now. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time, and those were very nice, incisive questions that are fun to talk about.
Thanks, Vern.
Hi, everyone. You have been listening to the great coach, Vern Gambetta. Vern was a great guest, and I hope you found a couple of ideas to share with your own family, friends, and colleagues. Some of the other key highlights for me were the way he describes the work he does with some of the world's top athletes as trying to reawaken the athlete within. How the great coaches are able to connect with people and are strong in their foundational beliefs. How part of good mental training is a good debrief after practice and after competition, where you're objective about what you've done, what you haven't done, and what you need to do. And wanting to leave a legacy where people knew he cared about them. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. And just before we go, if you have any feedback, then please let us know. Just like Peter P, who said, great storytelling and insights. Highly recommend. Thanks, Peter. The interaction with the people around the world who listen gives us great energy. And so if you have any feedback or comments, please let us know. All the details on how to connect with us are in the show notes or on our website, thegreatcoachespodcast.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.